From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, which means it's time for our weekly roundtable, where we talk about stories making headlines in different parts of the 21st state. Today, we're focusing on Champaign-Urbana. I'll be talking with two of my Illinois Public Media colleagues. Up first, education reporter Emily Hayes. Emily, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start by talking about how the disruptions in the federal government are, would you say, rolling downhill to affect communities across Illinois. There's a Veterans Affairs employee based in Danville who was fired and reinstated, but she remains uncertain about her future. What's going on there?
Yeah, so Chris Huffman was just months short of finishing her probationary period in February when she was fired. So that meant that she wouldn't get the kind of benefits that someone who is longer term would get. So she lost her livelihood with no notice, and she was set to lose her health insurance as well while living with a heart condition. So when the judge ordered federal employees to be reinstated, Huffman said it was nice to come back to her dream job, but, you know, it's still laced with uncertainty. She says the VA facility in Danville expects up to a fifth of its workforce could be cut by the end of the fiscal year in September. And she said it's all up in the air, which is frustrating. And she likes to have control over her life, but it's out of her control right now.
Yeah. Is there any sense of, like, which jobs are being cut, or is it just like a fifth and, you know, we'll make it work, whatever it is?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because this is reporting from May Antar, my coworker.
Sure. All right. So we, while we're on the subject of what's happening in the federal government, we've also seen a lot of town halls erupt across the country. There's a lot of angry constituents taking out their frustrations on elected officials. But we have not seen as much of that in Illinois. There was, however, in Mahomet, a protest calling out Congresswoman Mary Miller. Say more about that.
Yeah, so this is reporting by Mary Piacinti. She went to a protest of 80 to 100 protesters in front of the Mahomet office of Congresswoman Mary Miller, who represents the 15th Congressional District. They were demanding that this Trump-endorsed Republican hold a public town hall. And the event was organized by local Democratic and progressive groups. And one of the speakers said that she plans to run against Miller because she doesn't answer phone calls, her staff doesn't answer phone calls, and they don't send out form emails saying, "We received your email." That's what she said. So Miller was uncontested in 2024, and she's a member of the Freedom Caucus. Leadership in Washington has apparently advised Republican lawmakers to stop holding in-person town halls because of this anger and the protests. But Mary also noticed that there weren't a lot of town halls scheduled among local Democratic Congress people this month either.
Yeah, everybody seems to be doing these telephone ones where you can control the crowd a little better and are not going to have footage of you getting yelled at, I guess, is maybe the imperative. All right, let's move on to some University of Illinois news, a little more on your beat. The university got a letter from, I'm going to try and get this title right, the United States House Select Committee on Strategic Competition with the Chinese Communist Party. What does it say? What is the significance of this letter?
Yeah, so last week that committee sent out letters to six universities, including the University of Illinois. The letter said Chinese international students in STEM fields are a security threat by, quote, facilitating the technological transfers that strengthen Beijing's military and economic competitiveness at our nation's expense. So one of the pieces of evidence provided in the letter is that, according to the data they saw, only 25% of Chinese students intend to stay after graduation. So I've spoken to many international students who were told by their peers in the visa application process not to say that they want to stay, that this is a non-immigrant visa, meaning it's only supposed to be temporary. One PhD student I talked to said that is a red flag for your visa application, and that it's unfair to use Chinese students as a single entity, a pawn in this political game, instead of autonomous individuals with their own stories.
One of the other concerns here, I think, is that the idea that the university has grown to rely increasingly on foreign students who often pay full freight tuition, don't get the benefit of in-state tuition rates. Often they have governments backstopping their tuition payments. And I guess the committee, or at least the people on the committee letter, are concerned about that as well.
Yes, the letter said that universities are relying too much on these international students who potentially pose a security threat. I didn't see anything in the letter that suggested other ways of making up this tuition. And I think that would be challenging for places like the University of Illinois.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember talking to the previous, or one of the previous presidents. I don't remember if it was one or two before, years ago, and they were already, you know, setting up sort of recruiting offices in Southeast Asia because this was such a significant part of the revenue in the future of the university. All right. One other thing I want to ask you about, Emily, and that is local chapters of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, which represent some of the workers at the U of I. They held a rally on campus. What was that about?
So, you know, as I've been to a number of these rallies over the years, and in the past few years, a lot of times they're asking for higher wages because of inflation. So, but also, you know, some of these employees have pretty low wages for what they do. So I talked to Sherry Walker, who has been in her job for 17 years, and her job is teaching people how to get healthy meals while on food stamps. As a union employee, she earns $17 an hour. So she says under that salary, she is also eligible for the public assistance, not SNAP benefits necessarily, but public assistance, just like the people that she teaches. And she said, in our program, we teach to poverty level people. That's me. So she's one of nearly 2,000 workers in this union, in the two unions. And they say that administrators aren't offering them a fair contract after their last pay agreement expired in September. I also talked to the university spokesperson, Robin Kaler, who says the union is asking for a 15% boost in pay over 3 years. And U of I is offering just under 7%, which they say is more than the campus plan for salary increases.
All right, Emily Hayes, education reporter with Illinois Public Media. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
We turn now to another IPM colleague, Christine Herman, editor for our student newsroom. Christine, welcome.
Great to be here, Brian.
So officials have been monitoring for bird flu outbreaks. How is Champaign County looking?
Right. So we've all seen the news reports about bird flu leading to the mass slaughter of millions of hen-laying chickens, and also very concerning reports about crossover into cattle and even humans. The good news for Champaign County, we don't have any large chicken farms. So the effects here have been less and just different. But the virus has arrived. So one of our student reporters, Brendan Gallion, spoke with Julie Pride from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, who said, you know, there have been no wild bird flu die-offs that's considered five or more birds. And there have been no poultry outbreaks, no human infections, and no dairy farm positive. So that's the good news. But the virus has still infected several wild animals in the county. Brendan also spoke with Dr. Stephanie Lewis, who was on the 21st show not too long ago talking about bird flu, but, you know, she told him about, you know, there have been animals brought to the clinic, a red-shouldered hawk who was found on the road and tested positive for bird flu. Now, one thing is they're encouraging anyone who finds a sick or dead animal, a bird in the wild, to leave it alone. And if anyone finds a group of five or more dead birds, to contact the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. And that's statewide guidance there. But the virus is here. The concern about the crossover into wild birds is just, you know, that it could start to impact, you know, certain species that are already threatened. So in Indiana, there were 1,500 sandhill cranes that were recently killed by bird flu. That was earlier this year. So then there's some concern that this disease spreading could, you know, affect already threatened species.
Well, something we will, I suspect, have not heard the last of on the topic of bird flu. I also wanted to ask you about moving a little bit north of Champaign-Urbana to Rantoul. Some of our older listeners might remember when there was an Air Force base there. It was decommissioned all the way back in 1993. The government spent more than $200 million in cleanup efforts. It declared mission accomplished a couple of years ago, but the job is not really done yet, right? So what is the status of that?
Yeah, so this is a great example of kind of checking in on a situation maybe years after we had the latest, like, news peg press release for this. So Alyssa Eaton and Saeed Nonoal are students at the University of Illinois reporting for CU Citizen Access, and Alyssa Eaton worked with me on a radio piece about this story for the student newsroom. So basically, after that $200 million of cleanup, there still remains $76 million more worth of work to do. And just for a little bit of context, you know, when the base closed in the 90s, there were all sorts of public health concerns because of the high levels of asbestos and chemicals that are from fire extinguishing foam that were used, you know, kind of pervasively on the base for many, many years that have been linked to cancer. These are the forever chemicals, PFAS. So when the village of Rantoul reacquired the land and the assets of the retired military base in 2023, cleanup efforts have been continuing, and the Air Force continues to be involved. But there's still, you know, if you walk around the area, Alyssa and Saeed took these, you know, just incredible photos that you can find on our website, just abandoned buildings, broken windows, overgrown foliage just lining the streets. And some residents are kind of disappointed at how the government has handled the closure, how the city of Rantoul has been handling this very long cleanup process. And, you know, at the time of the story's publication, Rantoul officials didn't give comment on what the plan is going forward for these abandoned buildings and the remainder of the cleanup.
Hard to believe it's been, what, 32 years since it closed. All right, turning to another story, there's only one homeless shelter, I guess what you say, is a low-barrier homeless shelter in Champaign County, and its future is going before the voters. What's the story there?
Yes, so Strides is the name of the 24/7 low-barrier shelter. Low barrier means, you know, Strides is able to offer housing to people who might get turned away from other facilities. You know, other facilities might have certain sobriety requirements or mental health prerequisites before they're willing to receive guests. So, you know, these are kind of the vulnerable individuals in our community. They have a place to go. The facility is at risk of closure at the end of this year because when it was created a few years ago, the city used COVID-19 funds from the American Rescue Plan Act, and that funding is going to run out at the end of this year. So in the election coming up on Tuesday, voters have a chance to weigh in on a property tax increase that would allow Strides to continue to provide shelter as well as all sorts of social services that it provides to its guests. So, you know, to break it down for people, if you live in Champaign, if you own a home, if it's roughly valued around $200,000, you currently pay about $19 a year in property taxes that goes to the city's general fund, a large portion of which will help support, you know, all sorts of aspects of, you know, city functioning. That property tax would increase about sevenfold to $138 a year. So if you own a home that's $100,000, it would be an estimated $5 a month more than what people currently pay. So we'll see. It's a property tax levy referendum. We're keeping an eye on the votes and we'll report on the outcome of that next week. The tax increase, you know, it's $5 a month more per $100,000 home. It would lead to an additional $4 million in revenue that would support Strides, and also provide additional funding to the city for general assistance, rental assistance, and something called new assessor staffing. And without this increase, the city says there's no other funding source available to operate the shelter beyond this year. And this reporting comes from IPM Student Newsroom's Juliana Means.
Interesting that this is going up on one of these very, very low turnout municipal, I think they call them consolidated elections, not the sort of more well attended like presidential election year or something like that. And on that note, Christine, actually, I want to ask you, because, you know, people in different parts of Illinois, not every city, but some cities, they're going to be voting on mayors, city councils, school boards next week. Am I to understand we pretty much already know who the next mayor of Urbana is going to be?
Yes. Yeah. So Deshaun Williams is poised to become the next mayor of Urbana in the primary back in was it February? He ran against Annie Adams in the Democratic primary. There's no Republican candidate running for the position. So when Deshaun Williams won the primary, he effectively brought that mayor's race to a close. He won about 66% of the vote in Champaign. In Urbana. And he'll take office in May, becoming Urbana's first Black mayor. He says one of his first priorities will be to rebuild trust between the community and city government with a focus on transparency and ensuring community involvement in decision-making going forward. Williams has several years of experience in local politics. He was elected to the county board in 2020. And then the year after that, he stepped into what his current role is as the county's chief deputy treasurer, or even actually now the interim county treasurer. And so that's kind of a done deal already, even though the election isn't going to be finalized till, you know, next week.
Yeah, well, when you don't have an opponent, that's pretty much how it goes. All right, Christine Herman, editor of the Student Newsroom, thank you for sharing the reporting of your charges there.
Yeah, and I should note that reporting on Deshaun Williams comes from IPM Student Newsroom's Caitlin Devitt.
All due credit. Thank you so much, Christine.
You're welcome.
All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking more about politics. We'll check in with Linda Kenyon, our Washington reporter. But first, we're going to hear from Jeremy Gorner, Chicago Tribune reporter. Lawmakers are at about the halfway point in the spring legislative session. That's coming up after a break. I also want to mention next week on the program, among the topics we'll be diving into is the question of whether we are already in a constitutional crisis. We'd love to hear from you about what you think about that. Talk@21stshow.org is our email address. Is America already in a constitutional crisis? Let us know. Talk@21stshow.org. All right. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.